Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and legendary radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Vitamins and Supplements Can't Replace a Balanced Diet show, because that was the title of the article I read in Time Magazine reporting on the American College of Physicians, the Annals of Internal Medicine study about vitamins and supplements that showed that they can't replace a balanced diet.
Did we hit that point in our career where now we're just going to copy somebody else's headline?
Absolutely.
You didn't even make a play on it.
No, I didn't try to do anything. I was desperate for a show title, and one was supplied to me, so I did.
Speaking of desperate.
Well, now that's a terrible point to insert that cryptic comment, because I was about to thank our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio and give a special radio wave to the MSU Ronald G. Eglin Space Science Center. I will tell you again, speaking of desperate, Shelley Irving is off right now.
Did you answer my question from last week? How many shows do you get to miss before we vote you off the
island? She is on sabbatical in Isomville right now, doing on traffic patterns in the community of Isomville, and we've given her that sabbatical time. Yeah, I'm the boss. I did it.
Well, but you said we. You made it sound like some other of us had a say in this.
With us to provide an alternative viewpoint from the University of Kentucky Director of Networking and Infrastructure, Rick Phillips.
He's executive director, buddy.
I'm sorry.
Kidding. I'm just messing with you.
All right.
I like, you know, see, I can get you off your game. It's real easy to get you off your game.
I'm thrilled.
Okay, Tony. I'm going to tell them how to get on the website and look for some information about the show. They can go to wmky.org. That is the Moorhead State Public Radio website. There is a list of shows there. You have to find the Health Matters portion of the site, but I don't think that's too difficult. We've been navigating web pages now for 20 years. It's pretty or 30 years now. It's getting pretty easy. Look up the shows, listen to the audio. There's a summary there to help you figure out if that's the show you want to listen to or not. But, you know, we recommend just listen to them all. After that, jump over to Facebook. We do have a fan page. Facebook.com/HMRadioshow is where you'll find it. Leave us some comments. Look at some of the posts that go up there. I mean, we put things that are on the show up. We put things that are not on the show up. Some things just come out timely in between show recordings, and it's just appropriate to kind of throw them out there, and so you can be thinking about it. Obviously, we look at the comments and feedback and come up with, you know, what is a trendy show topic, or what is some information that you may want to hear about. That is your opportunity to give us that feedback. And then again, it can all be found right there on Facebook at facebook.com/HMRadioshow.
Our sponsor for the second week in a row, Risk Factors for Cancer. To lower your risk, just don't do this.
Boy, you really put some time into these.
I want to, you know, the whole purpose of a commercial, the whole purpose of a sponsor is to leave our radio fans with an impression.
I thought it was get chips.
Yeah. Well, pays the bills, but still. 7 major risk factors according to the American Cancer Society, even though cancer-related deaths are on the decline in the United States, not necessarily in Kentucky, but in the United States, hundreds of thousands of people still die each year from cancers caused by potentially modifiable risk factors. In Kentucky, we lose about 10,000 Kentuckians every year to cancers, and I can tell you over a third of them, lung cancer, is a preventable condition. If we only were to follow these cancer guidelines. So at least in the case of one-third of Kentucky's cancers, these can be prevented. They did a variety of population surveys, including the National Health Interview Survey, National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, National Immunization Survey, the teen version, to identify how many U.S. cancer deaths were linked with each of 7 risk factors. Smoking. One-third of all cancer-related deaths, the patient was a cigarette smoker. There is a decline in tobacco use in many places, not so much in Kentucky, and we still, by many measures, lead the nation in our smoking rates, and we are paying a terrible price for it. Number 2 is obesity. Obesity causes around, or that it's related to, around 7% of all cancer deaths attributed to overweight or obesity, according to the American Cancer Society. This is more of a problem, the cancer deaths, because breast cancer is one of those obesity-related cancers, as well as endometrial cancer, more among women than men, but men and women also have higher rates of cancer due to obesity. Number 3, we talked about a lot last week, alcohol consumption. 4% of U.S. cancer deaths are attributable to alcohol. especially mouth, pharynx, larynx, esophageal, liver, colon, and female breast cancers due to alcohol. There is no safe level of alcohol consumption. Your risk goes up as soon as you consume alcohol. Now, the thing is, when we talk about your risk going up, it's not like, well, if you take a drink, you will get cancer. That's not necessarily so. Keep in mind, though, cancer and heart disease are the leading causes of death among Kentuckians, 10,000 and change apiece between these two causes of death every year. And so that means if you are a Kentuckian, you're likely to die of heart disease or cancer, and this does raise your risk. So it may not raise it very much, but it raises the leading, the most risky thing that we Kentuckians face by a small amount. So alcohol consumption is one way, if you avoid that, you can lower your risk of cancer. A poor diet, 5% of U.S. cancer deaths. This is a high intake of processed meats and red meats, a low intake of fruits and vegetables. You flip that. More fruits and vegetables, less red and processed meats, and you're going to lower your risk of cancer.
I wonder what happens when you process your vegetables.
Processed vegetables are not a big issue. And I suppose if you consider fruit roll-ups to be processed fruit, well, they're not that good. Or if you juice, you know, that's not that good of a thing.
I mean, we still consider a potato a vegetable, right?
In some countries.
I mean, there was a long time where that was part of our food groups where potato was a vegetable. But, I mean, French fries are obviously probably not a good idea, right?
Yeah.
Where were you?
Poor diet. Only 16% of adults reported eating at least 3 servings of vegetables per day. And, again, those more educated people tended to eat more vegetables. I don't know what
that means.
Do you believe that?
Do you really believe that? Do you think our president eats more vegetables?
Is he more educated? That's a question. And I don't know if it, you know, education is not a substitute for smart.
I will say this. From a business standpoint, I suspect he does know a little more than
I got to tell you, I did not learn to eat vegetables in college.
Well, that's my point is where you get educated. I mean, yeah.
Why is it? Well, I guess I read about vegetables and I listen to public radio, which tells me that I should eat more vegetables. Maybe that's it. I don't know.
I don't know. That is a tough one. I don't know, man. That's hard. I want to feel like I'm educated, but I know I don't have a good diet.
Rick is all in on this show. I'm very pleased with that. All right, Rick, that's our sponsor, Risk Factors for Cancer. There's 7 of them. We got through 4, and we'll do some more next fractional portion. To lower your risk, just don't do this. Rick, it's time to talk about Q-tips again. This was a case report.
Your favorite topic.
Yes. 31-year-old man. Suffered years of on and off hearing loss and was hospitalized for a seizure at age 31. He was rushed to a hospital in Coventry, England, after he had a seizure and collapsed. But he had pain and hearing loss in his left ear. The pain worsened several days before he was rushed to the hospital. He began experiencing nausea and vomiting. He had been more forgetful in the day before he collapsed. You ever had one of those days where you're more forgetful? See, I'm sorry. I may laugh for an hour about that, Rick. All right, so back to this 31-year-old guy.
I don't see Shelley doing this for you. I just don't see that.
You are my comic relief. Coventry, England, 31-year-old man, collapsed. This is not funny, but still.
What's funny is you're about to tie this to a Q-tip.
I am. They scanned his head at the hospital to find out why he had collapsed and why he was forgetful and having the hearing loss. There were 2 abscesses between his brain and the membrane around it. These were intracranial brain abscesses that he had. And then there was something in his ear. They examined his ear under anesthesia because that's a very sensitive area, and they pulled out an impacted cotton bud from a Q-tip, from a cotton swab. They removed the cotton swab, diagnosed the man with necrotizing otitis externa, that is an infection that leads to tissue damage in the outer ear canal, and it had spread into his brain.
There were 2 of these or just 1?
Yeah, well, 2 abscesses. So
together?
Yeah, there were 2 areas where the infection had damaged the tissue around it and created an abscess. 10 weeks of antibiotics, infection cleared. He is doing well, no remaining symptoms, and is no longer using cotton buds to clean his ears. In 2017, the American Academy of Otolaryngology, Head and Neck Surgery Foundation, issued guidelines that warn that people should avoid using cotton swabs or other small instruments to clean their ears. This is what they said. This makes you think. There was a study published last year. This was published March 22nd. Last year, last spring, 2018, 66% of patients treated for traumatic eardrum perforations had caused the injury by sticking something in their ear.
Duh.
two-thirds of them stuck something in there. Specifically, they had done ear canal instrumentation.
This is just...
61% of the time, 45% involving cotton swabs. I'm not sure. I can't always tell when you're being sarcastic, but I will tell you. This is, I mean...
That was that sarcastic.
But that is a lot of ear injuries resulting. I don't know what I thought caused them. I figured it was explosions, or, you know, shrapnel. I don't know what it was.
Well, I mean, but there's a difference between seeing... I mean, what that is, that represents whatever the total number of people who injured their ear for some reason or the other. And if, I mean, let's be honest, it's pretty hard to, I mean, you're clearly going to be sticking something in there and you're going to hurt it.
Yeah.
Right? I think nobody ever said people who use a cotton swab, you know, did it right.
Well, I had an associate of mine. He was walking around the house and cleaning out his ears with a cotton swab, and he hit his elbow. He bumped his elbow, and he perforated his eardrum right there in his living room.
So let's be honest. This is the same dude you've got to tell don't walk with scissors, right? I mean, this is funny though, you know. And I'm a huge proponent of cotton swabs. They've kept my that ear area of mine, you know, able to hear for years. But I am not a doofus about it. I don't go, you know. You got to have some control, right? You have to like put your fingers on the tip of the you know, so you can only let it go in so far, right? You put a natural protection in so you can't stick it in too far.
Well, I see. So you put a some type of a stop on your
Q-tip. I use my two fingers. I grab it so that it can't go in any farther than my fingers.
And then if I just shove your elbow.
Well, you're not in the bathroom with me when I'm doing it.
Not usually,
Thank
no.
Thank goodness. Nor is anybody. That's my point. I don't usually clean my ears walking through the house.
I'm going to talk to Mary, and I'm going to see if I can break you of this horrible habit you've
got. Do you?
Well, walk through the house? No.
And clean your ears?
No.
Well, then, see, you're one of us.
One of the good ones.
I'm talking, but I mean, this research is absurd because, of course, they were dumb. They were stupid.
Well,
you don't go sticking stuff in
your
ear. I
did not know that. I thought maybe it was due to, like I said, due to falls or impact or shrapnel or explosions. Or I thought there were all sorts of things. Two-thirds of them are people sticking stuff in their ear. They're stupid people.
Exactly. I mean, we don't walk with scissors. You don't walk with knives. I mean, you know, this is the classic gun argument. I mean, we're blaming the gun.
Oh, boy, did we jump from Q-tips to gun control?
Well, I mean, we're blaming the device and not the person.
Don't know where the show's headed here, but
luckily we're about to shut it down first.
We're going to have a break, and we're going to go over the rules of the show before we come back with our second fractional portion.
You wanted me all in, you got it.
I like the old Rick who was just kind of ignoring me. This guy scares me. I don't know because he takes this. At any rate,
all right,
we're
going
to take a break.
Ear.
Come back with our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. We're going to need a second so Tony can collect his, I don't know what he's doing. We finally just had to come out of the break because, you know, we had to get something done.
Something's got to get done here. I am Dr. Tony Weaver.
I apologize. Apparently, I have put on some just terrible radio for you.
I am here with Q-tip control advocate Rick Phillips. Who's advocating background checks before you're allowed to buy
Q-tips. That is not true. I'm saying don't blame the device. Blame the person.
And you're listening to Health Matters. This is the Vitamins and Supplements Can't Replace the Balanced Diet Show. Here's the thing. You know, when people are trying to be healthy, a lot of people feel like, well, I'll take a vitamin, and they'll put their money into these vitamins and supplements, and there are some very simple things that really don't cost anything, but they do require some thought and some discipline. And
I mean,
these are the things that we're trying to emphasize. Don't spend your money on the vitamins and supplements.
Or the magic elixirs.
Right. Yeah, that's the big deal. But let's go, first of all, let's go with our sponsor, the 7 major risk factors for cancer. Americans are still
doing
this.
None of them are Q-tips.
None of them are Q-tips, thank goodness. Political debate continues, and who knows. Smoking is first thing. One-third of all cancer-related deaths, the patient was a cigarette smoker. Obesity, 7% of cancer-related deaths. Alcohol consumption, 4% of cancer deaths. Poor diet, 5%. And again, it's more meat, less vegetables. Physical inactivity, 2% of all cancer-related deaths. Human papillomavirus, HPV, and other infections were down below 2%, but We know that this human papillomavirus causes nearly all cervical cancers. It's to the point now where you can actually screen for cervical cancer, not getting a pap smear, but getting an HPV test, because if you can't clear it, you are at higher risk for cancer. All cervical cancers, 90% of anal cancer, 70% of oral cancers. Cancers of the mouth now, cause of changes in sexual habits and human papillomavirus. This is the leading cause now of mouth cancer, not smoking and drinking anymore. And then finally, exposure to ultraviolet radiation leads to melanomas, 1% of all skin cancer cases, but the majority of skin cancer deaths. And we're talking about sunburns at a young age, and we're also talking about tanning beds. Those are the things that you can avoid and measurably lower your risk of getting cancer. That's our sponsor. Now, before we got sidetracked on Q-tips, we were talking about vitamins and supplements can't replace a balanced diet. And this is the headline in Time Magazine, April 8th, reporting on a research publication from the Annals of Internal Medicine. This is a journal that I get regularly. You'll like this. The author's name was Fang-Fang Zhang. Fang-Fang Zhang, Rick. Can you remember that?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Associate Professor of Epidemiology at Tufts University School of Nutrition, Science, and Policy. For the general population, says Dr. Zhang. By the way, that sounds like a villain in a Superman movie, doesn't it? Dr. Zhang, you think?
It's probably more Marvel than DC.
Gotcha. For the general population, there's no need to take dietary supplements. More and more evidence suggests no benefits, so we should go with what the dietary recommendations suggest to achieve adequate nutrition from food rather than relying on supplements. The latest study, data from 30,000 adults who participated in the NAHANES, the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. Everybody talked about their supplements, their dietary habits. Of those 30,000 people, after 6 years, about 3,600 had died. 1 in 10 had died because they were surveying adults, and people die. Early on, they thought perhaps the dietary supplements, the vitamins and so forth, lower risk of death. But after they adjusted for education, socioeconomic status, these are things we know that change outcomes. Mostly higher income, better educated people who were in better health to begin with were taking the supplements. So now this is a weird thing, isn't it? Healthier people, higher educated people are taking supplements. And for that reason, you should not take supplements. It doesn't add anything, and it's the more educated people who are doing this. They're spending the most money on these supplements, and they are already the healthiest people. A couple of things. Calcium seemed to be a link to a higher risk of dying. So does vitamin D supplements. I wouldn't put a whole lot of stock in that because, once again, there is a mixture of people who take them because they are concerned about their health, people who take them because they are concerned about health in general. You're going to see some anomalies. The point is there is not a clear benefit. There are some that seem to be harmful. There are some that maybe seem to be beneficial, but only in certain people. And in general, they could not find a measurable benefit to taking these vitamins. Now, let me just say, the AMA Journal, I didn't bring it to this show, but I was reading before I left for this show, the AMA Journal says that vitamin D supplementation may lower your risk of cancer. So this is going to continue on. But really, his point, and I think it's a good point, is that it starts with a healthy diet. And that you cannot make up. You cannot eat nachos and multivitamins and be healthy.
Every day.
Yeah. Can't happen. With an abundance of uncertainty and a lack of evidence for supplements, Dr. Zhang says the average person should eat a balanced diet containing plenty of fruits and vegetables, whole grains, rather than turning to over-the-counter solutions. Over half of Americans use these supplements, and the reason is to improve or maintain their health. He says, now listen to this last sentence, that mindset needs to be changed given the scientific evidence. Our best science says you cannot get healthy with vitamins. We need to get away from the idea that vitamins, and there is an industry right now, a multi-billion dollar industry trying to convince you of that.
I mean, but aren't vitamins really just, what happens is there are certain people that a certain vitamin is actually something they really do need, right? Some people are low in something.
Right, they are deficient.
So they need to add to their diet. And there were legitimate reasons why they would do that. I remember my grandmother used to always have to take potassium, right?
Right.
And so there are certain things that and then over time, it just seems like the whole vitamin thing has morphed into its own industry.
Right.
And now all of a sudden they're magic elixirs and wonder drugs. And
they're not natural. They are not natural. They are manufactured in factories.
Of course.
And many of them are made to, we don't even understand the manufacturing conditions. They're made overseas, and they're marketed under different brands.
And the thing is, under most circumstances, they're unregulated.
That's absolutely right. No one knows
what's completely unregulated. We don't have to have testing done on them. They don't have to have any kind of quality control that is, you know, essentially government mandated or government controlled.
No.
It's crazy.
They will only step in if there's a problem.
Right.
So if we can't prove that they're killing people, then there is no regulation whatsoever.
Well, and I think probably the thing is it's not that they're killing people. They're just not helping people. And I mean, so what it turns into is that's probably more money that could go into a different part of your life
and
show more benefit.
So, please, this is...
Not a cheeseburger.
Back in December, I saved this, and I thought, well, maybe I'll stick it in, and this is a good place to put it.
Now that Shelly's not here this week, we can do it.
We can do it. Unhealthy foods to avoid at all costs. Number one, sugary drinks. If you come to my office and you have taken a large amount of insulin and your sugar is plummeting and you are at risk of going into a coma because of low sugar, I'm going to pull out a sugary drink because nothing will skyrocket your sugar faster than a sugary drink. Once it gets into your stomach, it goes directly into your system, and bam, you have a surge in your bloodstream of sugar. It's very unhealthy. I mean, if your sugar's low, it fixes it very rapidly. Yeah, other than an IV, it's the fastest way I can get your sugar up.
So let me ask you this, and this is just my crazy brain working, sorry. Could you take that same patient and give them a diet soda and have it have the same impact?
Absolutely not.
So they would not get the sugar rush that, because you hear people talk about how, well, we've talked about over the years how diet drinks kind of fake you into believing you're having sweets.
But if you don't have the sugar, you don't have the sugar.
So,
and
period.
So as far as a low sugar, it wouldn't work. Now but you bring up an interesting question. The idea, there are people who feel that sugar can be addictive because your brain loves to get a rush of something, whether it is a pill that you break into pieces and inject it IV, whether it is a powder that you sniff through your nose instead of taking it by mouth, your brain, or whether you smoke something, all those things are fast ways to get a drug into your brain. Whereas a patch, a nicotine patch, the kids go right past the nicotine patches to the glue because it's more fun for them to sniff glue than put a nicotine patch on because it's not the rush. Now, so sugar gives you that rush. The artificially sweetened beverages, they don't give you that rush. They don't hit those receptors, but obviously people like them. They're not particularly healthy, but they're not. If sugar is addictive, they shouldn't be addictive, although that's as far as I can get with that. It's an interesting concept you brought up, though. If you don't have the sugar, you shouldn't get addicted if sugar is, in fact, addictive.
Well, but I guess my point is I've heard probably countless times, being a diet soda drinker, I hear this all the time, and I guess maybe I'm clued into it more. But there's times where people will say that the actual chemistry of your body, the fake sweetness actually invokes a similar process that regular sugar would do in your body. And I guess really, in a sense, it may in some way, maybe in the brain, but not obviously not enough to deal with
it. They're not the receptors there. You do worry about diet drinks. There's several things. One is these chemicals. They have been extensively tested. But the one thing we don't know is what do they do to the germs in your colon? We've talked a lot about we need to get away from the chemistry of food and start thinking about the biology of food. What are we growing in our guts when we drink these things? And certainly an artificially sweetened drink does not appear to grow the right germs in your colon.
No, I'm just curious how it would impact
but
that.
The sugary drinks, high in calories, but also restricting sugary drinks has actually been associated with some population weight loss in Mexico City. So they're the worst. French fries. Fat, calories, salts, acrylamide, which is a cancer-causing thing that is unavoidable in the frying process. A lot of reasons not to eat French fries. Refined grains, white bread, white rice, pasta, cereals, finer texture, last longer on the shelf, but key nutrients removed. Processed meats, we've talked about that. Smoking, salting, curing, or adding other preservatives linked to cancer. Processed meat predicts stomach and colorectal cancer. And again, processed meats, those in a geometric shape, those in a plastic package, out in the open at the convenient mart. Red meat, more than 18 ounces per week increases colorectal cancer risk.
Probably wouldn't be a good idea to have an 18-ounce steak because it's pretty much your whole
week. That's your week. Candy, sugar and calories, bad for your teeth. Those are, those are foods just to don't eat them. Not in moderation, not in anything. Just don't do it.
So no more hot dogs for you ever in your life. You're done.
My wife does not buy or prepare hot dogs.
But don't you go to a carnival or a basketball game or...
I don't eat at the basketball game. There's, I mean, you think about it. Concession stands do not do you well. If you would eat before the game, you wouldn't have to excuse yourself and
all
annoy
the booster
me.
Parents listening to us are cringing right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I know. I understand that. They sell nachos with cheese, and a lot of that stuff, you can sell last year's stuff right along with this year's stuff because it lasts forever. But that is not food. It is just simply not food. And so the first thing.
Can we at least say it's not healthy food?
Yeah. So you remember our Health Matters informal rules, and we talked about geometric shapes, things that your grandmother wouldn't recognize as being food. Nothing from a gas station except bananas. Nothing from a concession stand. I mean, these are just general rules to live by. And there's nothing really going to be very healthy at a concession stand. All right, next up, this is April 4th. This is Reuters, but they're reporting on a study published in The Lancet. People who drink moderately, consuming 10 to 20 grams of alcohol a day, raise their risk of stroke by 10 to 15%. Heavy drinkers, 4 or more drinks a day, blood pressure rises significantly. And again, the 10 to 20 grams, that's considered 1 to 2 drinks a day. That's supposed to be the recommended amount of alcohol, but still, risk of stroke goes up. And so I think we talked about alcohol and cancer. There was some hope that alcohol might help with cardiovascular risk factors, but even what's considered moderate drinking does raise your cardiovascular risk. You cannot drink alcohol for health, and that's any wine, anything else.
There's definitely contradictory studies there. I mean, we've been told two glasses of wine or something. I mean, there's plenty of folks that have reported that over the years that. But they're talking about two probably totally different things, right? One's probably good for heart health, and the other's bad for stroke health.
The thing is, Rick, you're right. There is contradictory information out there. I think the point is you can't say that you should drink for health. There's too much negative information out there for that to be a clear course of action. The American Cancer Society is telling you that it's 4% of cancer deaths. This study, again, in The Lancet, they found that it was associated with higher rates of stroke. And so if you're trying to stay alive, then it does not make sense to take alcohol to stay alive. If you like alcohol, that's your business, that's fine. The purpose of life is to do things you enjoy. I'm just saying don't take it up for your health and don't assume that it's good for your health because in the face of all these contradictory studies, there is no clear evidence that it would make you live longer. And the problem is a lot of people who drink wine wind up, once again, being better educated, higher socioeconomic. So when you do the observational studies, you think, wow, you know, this is a great thing. People tend to live in the suburbs and have purebred dogs and live a long time. But it's not necessarily – this is one case where you're not trying to imitate these people because if you don't have the other things, it's not clear that the wine alone is going to make the difference. Okay, next up, and this was rather annoying. This was from the AMA Journal. It was published 2 weeks before this show airs. Adhering to a healthy diet in middle age does not seem to reduce your risk for dementia. This was a long-term study in the AMA Journal. 8,000 dementia-free adults in the United Kingdom completed a food frequency questionnaire. Average age 50. They calculated the alternative healthy eating index. I've actually got a little bit of that score. 11 food categories, and then they looked to see who got dementia. During a follow-up of 25 years, 4% diagnosed with a dementia by age 75, and it did not differ according to what they ate. This also held true in analysis that considered subsequent dietary assessments at ages 56 and 61. Shorter-term studies suggest maybe you could avoid dementia with certain types of diet. This study did not predict that. Now, they were talking about this was something I had not heard of, the Alternative Healthy Eating Index score. So I said, all right, well, what is the Alternative Healthy Eating Index? And it just happens, pulled this paper about the Alternative Dietary Index, and it did predict chronic disease. Maybe this will not prevent dementia, but it did predict chronic disease. And this is what their Alternative Healthy Eating Index was. Vegetables. Number of servings per day. Maximum score, 5 servings of vegetables per day on average. That's basically you're a vegetarian. I don't think you can eat meats and other things and get 5 servings a day. Maybe you can. I don't know. Fruits, the minimum score, 0. The maximum score, 4 servings of fruit. 5 servings of vegetables a day, 4 servings of fruit. Whole grains, grams per day, and that's really hard. How many grams of whole grains did you eat today, Rick?
Zero.
Yeah, 75 for women, 90 for men. I guess that's a, you know.
Were there whole grains in the taco wrap that I had today?
Maybe. Sugar sweetened beverages, more than one, that's your minimum score. That's a bad idea. Zero is your best. Rick's going to, now he's going to pop the fizz on his Diet Mountain Dew.
Diet Mountain Dew, buddy.
Just to show us what we're talking about with sugar sweetened beverages.
No, you're just long winded on this one.
Nuts and legumes, don't eat any. That's the minimum. If you eat more than one serving a day, red or processed meats, more than 1.5 servings a day. That's bad. Zero, that's good. And then they talked about trans fat, polyunsaturated fat, sodium, and alcohol. And they came up with an alternative healthy eating index based on how much of these things you ate. And they
how'd you score?
Most of the time, well, I'm going to go low on vegetables. That's my problem. I think everything else, I do eat. I eat an apple a day because I like to keep myself away.
I have a banana a day.
Yeah. And I'll eat some whole grains in the morning. I don't eat sugar-sweetened beverages or fruit juices anymore.
I have my whole grains at night.
Yeah, got nuts. Do that. But I do eat I eat rib meat.
I do, too.
I like my rib meat. It's going to be
I wouldn't say that I have it every day because some days I'll have chicken. But it's chicken or rarely do I go with pork. So
yeah.
It's going to be chicken or beef most days.
Yep. And you're not a fish guy.
No, not really. I mean, I'll eat fish, but I don't make fish.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I usually don't order it at a restaurant.
My wife, tuna will do. We love tuna. That's our fish.
It's an appetizer for me.
All right. We're going to come back with our next fractional portion of Health Matters after a break. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. The show has settled into its usual boring routine.
We're no longer advocating
controversial Q-tip restrictions, hey, so I feel a lot better about where we're going.
Use them wisely.
Absolutely. This is the Vitamins and Supplements Can't Replace a Balanced Diet show because that is the truth. Our sponsor for the final time, Risk Factors for Cancer. To lower your risk, just don't do this. Run through these rather rapidly, but I want to embed them, to sear them into your ear like an embedded Q-tip bud. How about that?
Oh, I thought you were going to say seared tuna.
Yeah. No, I don't want tuna in the ear.
We were talking about food before.
No, we were, but I'm trying to pull the whole thing together here. And
you're doing a terrible job.
I know I am. Number one, smoking, third of all cancer-related deaths. Number two, obesity, 7% of all cancer-related deaths. Three, alcohol consumption, 4% of all cancer deaths. Four, poor diet, 5% of all cancer-related deaths. Physical inactivity, 2% of all cancer-related deaths. HPV and other infections, if you look at oral cancers, cervical cancers, this is the cause. Overall percentage of cancer deaths, less than 2%. But for young people and for some really hideous cancers, HPV vaccination can prevent these cancers. Number seven, exposure to ultraviolet radiation, sunburns, tanning beds. Those two things raise your risk of melanoma. People using tanning beds before age 35, 60% more likely to develop melanoma, a deadly form of skin cancer.
So Tony, isn't it amazing there that without a doubt, five of those things are completely in your wheelhouse, right? You have the ultimate authority over the first five of those. The HPV, there's some things you can do to minimize it, but and then obviously with sunlight, there are going to be times where you can protect yourself and you should always protect yourself against sunlight. But I would argue you're exposed to the sun just because you're on Earth, and
right.
There are going to be times where that it's going to have a factor. But the first five, completely reversible.
Okay. That is our sponsor. Risk Factor for Cancer. Lower your risk. Don't do this. This next one, April 2nd, 2019, New York Times. These are about these drug sites. These are the online drug sites where you can get the drug on the internet without, you can get a prescription for it written for you without.
Well, you technically have a visit.
Yeah.
You get visited by a physician and you get a prescription.
Right. Several sites. Roman is one. Hers is another. Lifestyle drugs for sexual health, hair loss, and anxiety. You can just order these things with a couple of clicks.
Sure.
You diagnose yourself. You select the drug that you want. You put in some personal health information and, of course, your credit card stuff. And then a doctor assesses your choice but doesn't necessarily assess your health or counsel you. They just look and they say, yeah.
Well, we really don't know. We've never been involved in one.
Right. Medicine arrives in the mail days or weeks later. This is what the New York Times says. Instead of doctors making diagnosis and suggesting treatments, the patients request the treatment, and they largely serve as gatekeepers. Now, that is the thing that we've made fun of for years on this show. Ask your doctor if this is right for you. This is the end product of that mentality that, you know, you rather than going and asking for advice, rather than going and presenting the problems you have, you just simply say, is this the right drug for me? Is this the thing that I want? And these doctors, by and large, they're going to say yes.
So we're going to change our tagline to tell your doctor what's right for you.
Click on Health Matters and your doctor will authorize it for you.
Well, swipe your credit card first.
Right. Answering questions online, two reporters for the New York Times in California gave approval for generic Viagra through Roman and Hims, and Third Times reporter ordered Adii. Adii is a woman's libido drug. It was an absolutely bizarre drug that is supposed to increase a woman's sex drive. It didn't necessarily work, but it made it to market anyway, and they are in search now of a target audience of women who are desperately wanting to have a greater sex drive.
Since I got myself in trouble with the Q-tips, I'm going to stay quiet.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
You're welcome.
In California, a doctor who was prescribing Viagra online surrendered his medical license after the state's medical board accused him of failing to provide standard medical care, like examining a patient or taking vital signs or things like that. Now, some of these sites, Kick Health is one, they sell blood pressure pills and other prescription drugs for unapproved uses. For instance, propranolol, we use that. It's a heart drug. It slows your heart down, lowers your blood pressure. It happens to be good for some types of tremor where your hands shake, right? Because it's an adrenaline blocker medicine. Now, if you start blocking adrenaline, you're going to get into slow heart rates. You can pass out. A friend of mine, as a matter of fact, took some propranolol before he had a talk and passed out during the talk because the propranolol kicked in and it slowed his heart rate and dropped his blood pressure. But for a person who has a really extensive tremor, sometimes propranolol can make a huge difference. We also use them for migraines. And adrenaline is one of the chemicals that gets poured out in your body when you're anxious. However, no one is really, first of all, they're not FDA approved for anxiety. Doctors do a lot of things that are not necessarily FDA approved, but they make common sense scientifically. The idea, though, of taking a blood pressure drug without an examination, without really speaking to a health professional of any sort, is scary. And the drug Adii, that's the female libido drug, can cause fainting if taken with alcohol. And that's the sort of thing that you talk to your doctor about and decide whether or not you want to use this medicine. Well, they bypass that. Now, these sites say, look, we are not – Uber did this. Uber said, look, we're not a transportation company. We're just a tech platform. The fact that people use us to get other people to give them rides does not make us a transportation company. Well, that's exactly what this place is saying. We are just an exchange platform. Doctors prescribe medicines to patients who contact us. All we do is we're like the telephone service. You call a doctor, you're going to use a phone. The phone is not practicing medicine. But these places basically set it up so that the doctors have contracts and can work through them. And so whether or not they're actually clinics or health-related sites, I think that's going to be determined in court. The chief executive of Kick said his company was trying to be careful and cautious about complying with health laws. Federal marketing restrictions on drug makers do not apply to his company, so he can advertise a drug for indication because he's not a drug manufacturer, so he can do that. Neil Epperson, women's behavioral health expert at University of Colorado, says, where are the regulatory agents? How can this be okay for people to basically just to apply for medicines and get them without any questions. I mean, they fill out a form, but no one actually talks to them, advises them about the medicines. I don't know.
I don't know either, Tony. I mean, you know, back when I was working heavy, you know, 12, 13 years ago in telemedicine, you know, this was the thing that you feared with telemedicine is that people could just jump on video and, I mean, or non-video. They could jump on something that didn't require an interaction, a two-way interaction with a physician, and then thus you could do that. And now we're doing it by web form.
Yeah.
And it's really, you know, there are probably legitimate uses, but the problem is there's too many illegitimate uses.
Well, for those of our radio fans who are maybe a little bit more knowledgeable about health, there is an antidepressant drug called Zoloft. It's a pretty good antidepressant drug, but one of the side effects is it makes it difficult to have an orgasm. This site, Roman, they actually market this as a way to prevent premature ejaculation. Can't have an orgasm, then you're not going to have a premature ejaculation. So they're using antidepressant drugs to increase your sexual...
That doesn't sound like that's...
That's a terrible
healthy.
Idea. It's absolutely a terrible idea. You're on an antidepressant medicine daily in order to improve your abilities, I guess, in the bedroom. Without any type of physician supervision. That's the one thing. Once you get the drug, there's no follow-up visit to make sure you're not having side effects, no blood tests run or anything else. And medicines like Zoloft, they do have side effects.
Right. I don't know. The whole thing is a recipe for disaster.
It is. I think it, though, it is a measure of the change about the way we approach our healthcare system. It's so much more transactional. You mentioned, you know, wouldn't it be nice to have an advisor, a person to guide you through all this morass of advertising, of expensive medicines, of rare diseases, and so forth? I have a patient who's concerned about every laboratory test right now. You know, anything that's out of normal must be treated and must be corrected. And I'm trying to help this person get through that and understand that laboratory tests, you look for patterns. You don't just try to make all the labs normal. That is not necessarily a state of health. And so you want a person who can advise you and guide you through that, or at least I thought you did, and that's the way I was trained. That was the person I was trained to be. But the idea now of a person who will certify that you can smoke marijuana, a person who will give you antidepressants to increase your sexual performance, a person who will hand you over anti-hypertensive medicines so you won't be as anxious with no questions, really no significant questions asked and no follow-up, it is, you know, it's a vending machine essentially. And
I'm really trying to figure out how this fits into what I would perceive as a very litigious environment, right? I mean, I don't know. It just seems like to me there's an awful lot of room here for lawsuits, for legal problems, and I don't know. I hate to say that on the air. We don't know, but I mean, it just doesn't sit real well with me. Because again, it's and Tony, some of this could be our age. You know, some of this is people. One thing I have definitely learned in the business world is people 20 years younger think different.
Yes,
they definitely just don't think like I do, and that's not. I'm not suggesting in any way, shape, or form that's a bad thing. It's just different.
Well, you take my patient who's having the lab test. What happens, I know, is this person Googles the lab test,
right,
and figures out all the diseases that are associated with this lab test. Now, I know that those diseases would cause other laboratory tests or other physical complaints, and I have done a physical exam on this person, and I know some things about this person, so I can tell them, no, that is, I know Google says that it is, but that's not your problem. Again, if all of your information then comes from the internet, then you get used to the fact, why would you trust a human being? I am a doctor. I don't read everything. I don't know anything. Google does. So how can I compete with Google? The problem is Google doesn't recognize patterns. Google simply provides facts. But it provides many more facts than I know, no doubt about that.
Sure. And I mean, if you use Google to find information on a regular basis, what you'll find is rarely do you get it on the first search result, right? I mean, so it's sometimes the answer is not always right there. Sometimes you got to go look for it. You know, it. There are other factors that change what you're looking for. You know, for instance, have you ever noticed on the Google page where it says, you know, I'm feeling lucky?
Yeah.
It returns one result. And you'll see. I think I got it. But, you know, maybe you try doing that every time. Try doing that with your healthcare every single time. And it's just not going to – you're going to realize there's so much more to it.
And it so far, at least, it's not been able to really to do probabilities. Again, you know, this laboratory test is rarely associated with this disease. It is. You can find a case example of it, but that's not the main thing.
Well, true, a lot of the stuff that was initially, now there's a whole lot on Google now, obviously, that wasn't there, you know, years ago. But when we first started doing some of these searches, the things that found their way into Google were the research, which are sometimes the corner cases.
Yeah.
Right? So you may find the unusual thing out there because that's what's there. The everyday results may not get logged there.
I'm just saying, if you grew up that way, you know, rather than accumulated wisdom of older people in your family or discussing things, if you grew up finding your facts on the internet, then this makes perfect sense. You can get this medicine. You fill out a form. You can check on the internet to see what the side effects are. You can check on the internet to see how often to take it. And why not? Why would you mess around and waiting in a doctor's waiting room when you can do all that without even leaving your chair?
Well, but I think, you know, and I think I would add, I think, you know, one of the things that I think Google gets mistaken for is it gets mistaken for some type of all-knowing research thing. Really, what Google is a really good set of Encyclopedia Britannica. I mean, it is designed for reference and for research, and you can go and find and dig and correlate. And, you know, you can't just go to Google and find and there's your research paper right there. You have to cull through what's there and determine if this is right or if this fits or if this doesn't fit. I mean, anybody who's done any kind of research, and, you know, I'm mired down in some of that with school right now. But, again, Google, the collective knowledge of the internet is one heck of an Encyclopedia Britannica.
So we'll leave that as just for me, more than a topic on this show. It was just it is a direction that our healthcare system is headed that I find disturbing. But
one last question: do you think that the healthcare business is demanding this, or do you think the clientele is demand? I mean, where's the demand for
right.
this coming?
Well, good advertising, as you know, can create demand. And so I think there's
never – I have never looked at two bathtubs and decided I'm going to go buy something.
Yeah. You're so referring to the erection –
well, yeah, the two tubs and the, you know, that's just a
– I understand, but I think it's a combination. I think it is, as you mentioned, a trait of younger people. I think if I retire, if I were to come back in 10 years after I retired, I would not recognize the healthcare system I'd left. It's an evolving thing, and it evolves to be whatever people want it to be. And if that's the wishes, then that's what the healthcare system will be, and that's how you get your medicines in the future. I don't want to be dystopian.
So it's a little bit push and pull, right?
Right.
It's not necessarily the client. It's not necessarily the advertising. It's kind of the culmination of both kind of finding each other.
Right. March 6th, AMA Journal of Surgery. Looking at between 2004 and 2017, dog walking for seniors increased rates of bone fractures. Nearly 8 in 10 who suffered pet-related fractures were women. Most commonly broken bones, hips, wrists, and upper arms. Basically a fall. Bone fractures associated with walking leashed dogs more than doubled among U.S. residents 65 and older between 2004 and 2017. And this was, again, looking at a national database. It increased from 1,600 in 2004 to 4,400 almost in 2017, higher than the overall number of fractures. For a lot of our senior citizens, pet ownership is one replacement for children and family. They become very close to their pets, but there is a downside. Particularly, it appears, for older women.
Do you think this is associated with the boomers starting to retire?
Yes.
There's just more of them.
There are. Well, there are certainly more people, and perhaps we are able now to pinpoint it. So the increase may not be as much, but I will say I believe it does
This is more a cautionary tale on what you should worry about, not necessarily.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, the benefits of owning a pet when you're older and the loneliness is wonderful to have a pet comes with a price. Can you get us off the air, Rick?
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Brian Courtney, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and Wherever You Are, Shelley. And to you, our loyal radio fans, remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to our show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember these tips on how to teach your children to limit their Health Matters listening. Although research on this topic is still limited, recommendations for all parents include the following.
Step back and think about your relationship with Health Matters. Are you sometimes using it as a stress reliever instead of taking a walk or deep breaths? Are you sometimes purposefully withdrawing into Health Matters from difficult family interactions?
Think about what aspects of Health Matters stress you out the most. Save these for a time when your family's not around so they don't feed off your stress.
Like Q-tips. Prioritize mealtimes, bedtimes, and other downtime with your children.
Remember that children watch and copy their parents, so they are learning how to listen to Health Matters even when parents do not realize it.
Avoid behaviors you don't want your kids to have. Listening to Health Matters while driving or ignoring someone else's calls for your attention while your ears are on the radio. The more we parents demonstrate this type of tech-life balance, the more our children will learn to do the same.
You know, and on that note, I'm just going to end. Thanks for listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.